Right now, I'm joined on the phone by Tanya Reinhart. She is a professor of linguistics, most recently at Tel Aviv University. She's also the author of the book Israel-Palestine, How to End the War of 48. She's also the author of the forthcoming book, which is coming out in September, of The Roadmap to Nowhere, Israel-Palestine since 2003. And she writes columns for Yediot Aharonot, the biggest Israeli paper. Biggest Israeli daily paper. Hello, Tanya. Can you hear me?
Yeah, hello. I can hear you. Good to be with you.
Thank you for joining me today. It's evening there, morning here, so I'll say good evening to you. So let's start off, if you can give us an overview of what is going on in Gaza right now and what is also happening in parallel, what is happening in Israel?
Right now, if you mean today, I assume you're talking about the developments today. The Israeli army has seems to have changed tactics. So apparently there has been some international protest over their original plan. So what they are now doing is moving from one place to another. So yesterday they were in the north of the Gaza Strip, where their declared goal, as you could read it very freely in the Israeli paper, was to create a no man's land between the strip and the Israeli border. The if you read the full details of the plan, it included evacuating the people of Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia. Beit Lahia is that town that was bombarded heavily, both Beit Hanun and Beit Lahia, and in Beit Lahia, the Ralia family was killed. So this is that area. The declared goal is no less than actually evacuating this place. So on Thursday of last week, not 29 of June, the Israeli papers disclosed this very explicitly. It appears that in the meanwhile, that was that did arise some objection, maybe even from the U.S. So now they have the tactics is that they are going to stay in each place only for a day or two. That's from today's paper, right? Only a day or two, and then they moved from the north of the West Bank to the area more in the middle where the Karni crossing is, so nearer to Gaza City. So they are operating in the West Bank and the Gaza, also in the West Bank, but in the Gaza they are militarily present. Much of the Gaza Strip is still without electricity because of the failure of the previous one, and the situation is very bad. You know, with the Strip is sealed, the Israeli tanks are in and out, and children wake up at night from the booms of the airplane booms, and hospitals are having problems with electricity. The situation is bad, but and it's not fully clear how it will develop.
I hate to interrupt you here, but what was going on in the last couple of days as well? I mean, we were hearing reports yesterday here that there was a lot of casualties, that there was a lot of Palestinians being killed and seriously, yeah, seriously injured. Can you give me a rundown of what was happening yesterday?
Yes, yesterday there were very serious fighting, particularly in the north of the West Bank, in the north of the Gaza Strip. The area is closed to journalists, so that's what Israel is always doing when it's operations. So Chris McGreal from The Guardian, who was a very good source of information about the Gaza Strip, is now in Jerusalem, not allowed to be in Gaza. So by Israeli sources, the majority, at least 40 people, that was in the last couple of days, not just yesterday, 40 people were killed. Israel claims most of them are militants, but we don't really know. The Al Jazeera claim many of them are citizens. So the typical thing is not much known about Israel's operation in practice in the last 2 days, but the essentially what they were doing was trying to widen the empty area between Israel and the Palestinian towns. Another thing is fighting with militants, trying to reduce Hamas strength, because one of the longer term goals of this, as again declared in Israeli media, is toppling the Hamas government.
Now, what has been happening in Israel as all this is going on there? Has there been widespread public support for this action in Gaza? Or, and if not, what has been the reaction?
Well, the amazing and most horrifying thing that you can't avoid noticing is in Tel Aviv, where I live, mainly there is ignorance of what's going on. So Tel Aviv is in a big festivity. It's a summertime. There are festivals. There are coffee shops. And the city goes about its business as if nothing is happening. And it's a bit, it's hard to understand in Gaza, I mean, imagine that Tel Aviv would have no electricity in half the city, and it's hot, and it's very hot, and air conditioning doesn't work, electricity, even electric fans don't work, and you hear bombs and sonic booms, and your children are waking up and crying, and you can't even turn the light on to calm them down, and somehow none of this seems to have penetrated the conscious of the festive Tel Aviv, and this is the problem, because what has been happening is the Palestinians were pushed behind walls in the Gaza Strip, and Israel is working on creating the same situation in the West Bank. And they are behind the walls, invisible. Their suffering is invisible. And at the same time, so life in Israel can continue undisturbed. But still, if you ask about what do Israelis think, it doesn't mean this festivity doesn't, to judge from Tel Aviv, it doesn't mean that people actually want this operations to go on. They are just suppressing it. They don't want to know about it. But I don't think you can unequivocally say that there is a big support for the operation. And I mean talking by the polls, because otherwise you can't know what people think. But there's more indifference than real support. And the reason you don't know anything about it is that the whole thing is never discussed. The Israeli media is producing just exactly precisely one narrative, which is probably identical to the narrative of the U.S. In the U.S. media. Just in Israel, you hear it more and more. And the narrative is always that Israel is doing everything it can, everything it does only to defend itself. But Israel in this conflict, Israel in fact is the peace-seeking side. It has already evacuated the Gaza settlements. It wants to evacuate more. It wants to do peace with its Palestinians. But the Palestinians do not accept anything, and they keep threatening Israel's existence with their Qassam, and then the rocket Qassam, and then with the taking a soldier as a hostage. So that is the story, that Israel is only doing what it does for self-defense. But when you read the Israeli media, you get many more facts, and you know that this story, you know at least subconsciously, everybody must know that this story has absolutely no basis in reality. First, Obviously, this operation is not about releasing the hostage. That is not, if you, there's no way to release a hostage by bombarding the whole city, and if anything, they are endangering the hostage and the soldier father, Shalit's father, called on Israel to accept an agreement, to accept to accept exchange of prisoners, to halt the military operation and solve this peacefully. So it seems obvious that if anything, Israel is completely ignoring the life of the hostage. So far they have turned down all Palestinian offers for a ceasefire. So even today, Hania again called for a ceasefire, but there were Egyptian brokered proposals and various proposals to have the hostage returned in return for a promise of Israel to release also at least women and children prisoners. And also, the Palestinians are demanding a mutual ceasefire, one that not just they will halt their qassams, but Israel will also halt its attacks upon them. So far, officially Israel has been rejecting all these things. So the people in Israel, according to the polls, are very skeptical about this. So like the father of the abducted soldier, they in polls last week there were 52% calling for prisoner exchange and negotiating with Hamas, and today, this week, it was already 60 or more percent. So the majority of Israelis, in fact, does not support this means of handling the conflict.
Have there been
But
demonstrations in Israel against what's
yes,
happening?
there has been, and right now, right today in the afternoon, there has been big demonstration in Nazareth in the north of the country, but there have been almost there has been demonstrations since it all started of various left groups, and there were Gush Shalom published, it's one of the left groups published a big ad in Herald Tribune asking for the international community for the sake of Israelis to intervene and stop the military operations. So there is active opposition, but I think that, and but that these are few people. But I think if you look at the polls, there's no such, the majority is not very happy with the operation on the background because of the hostage. So that does not believe so they perhaps don't care about the fate of the Palestinians in Gaza, so but they do care about the fate of the Israeli soldier.
And they don't think this is going to bring him back home alive and well.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would think that's completely clear that this is not the way to, because, and Israel has good experience with this when they tried to free, like Nachshon Waksman, a hostage a few years ago who died through the liberation. So it's, and obviously if you are with your army there, the group that holds the soldier may get panicked, and as the army gets close, they may just get killed. That's just common sense. You don't have to be a military analyst to understand that this is not how. But the point is also, if you are an Israeli, you read in the paper, you read it a week ago, that the goals of the operation are much bigger. It's not, it's explicitly said that the operation has been planned for a very long time, and its real main goal is topple the Hamas government and destroy the Hamas security forces and disable the government from functioning. That was in the paper, that this is so, and in fact, if you see how it developed, you see that Israel has been provoking Hamas to break its ceasefire for quite a while. So at least the Hamas has declared a ceasefire already in January last year. They, at that time, they declared that they want to move from to change the line from military resistance to political resistance and struggle. So they want to become a political party. You would think that, that anybody interested in reducing the level of violence and in reaching some solution would welcome such a development, that the group is moving away from terror and militarist activity to political activity, but that's not how it turned out. Hamas did stick to their word. They completely renounced both terror and military activity. They, Hamas does not participate in the Qassam, the rocket launching on Israel. These are other smaller groups, but not the Hamas since for 17 months. And they did go through the political process. They did gain the support of the people in elections that, for example, Jimmy Carter describes as one of the most fair and democratic and representing of the people's will in the world. He said that at the, in the Herald Tribune. So they did keep their side of the deal, but Israel has never agreed to accept it. So Israel does, is refusing to recognize the Hamas government. And
so this was a ceasefire declared, or a true, I don't know how you put it. It was ceasefire declared by unilaterally by Hamas in January.
Hamas and all Palestinian factions. It's called Tahadiyya, which means calm. It's not exactly ceasefire. It's ceasefire in reality. In reality, they ceased fire. And there was no terror. Since January last year, that was at the eve of Abbas' second election, and a summit in Sharm el-Sheikh, they declared that a a period of calm, they call it, Tahadiyya. And all Palestinian factions, except for the Islamic Jihad, declared that. And the major, most significant is the Hamas declaration, because Hamas is the biggest faction that did use military actions.
And right? they honored this until when? When did this come to an end?
It did not come to an end. So it has been honored steadily since then. It's, again, you find the security sources say that it's, Hamas has not participated in rocket launching and in certainly not in terror attacks on Israel. And Israel has been doing its best to provoke them to provoke them into breaking the ceasefire. So the last round started in June 8 this year, last month, a month ago. Israel assassinated Jamal Abu Sama Hadana, who was appointed the head of security forces of the Interior Ministry of the Hamas. So he's a senior figure, of appointee of Hamas, whose role they viewed as restoring calm and order in Gaza, and in fact even trying to maintain the calm. And Israel assassinated him. So renewing this assassination policy on the top Hamas appointee is obviously is a provocation. And at that background of provocation and of anger over this assassination, they increased their shelling. So as tension was boiling, they increased their shelling, and 2 days later,
I'm going to make clear, the Israelis increased their shelling.
Yes.
Why were they shelling Gaza?
They have been shelling Gaza since they left let's clarify. Hamas did not participate in the rockets, but small Palestinian groups did continue all this time to launch rockets. But that would mean an average of at most one a day, so in some days not. And these was in fact minimal. It is disturbing for the people of Sderot and the nearby people. It's not easy life when you know that some rocket may, although you know that the chances of hitting you are close to zero. It's a fearful thing. So there was some, but very sporadic. So this has not stopped. The sporadic Qassam launching did never stop. But what we are talking about, what Israel was trying and succeeded in provoking, was a massive Qassam launch. And Israel wanted it as in because Israel is not interested in recognizing Hamas. So the story is at this, going back to the June 8, 9, 10, these days, as the frustration was boiling over the assassination, they started shelling. So they killed the Ghalia family. They denied, but they did that. And then they killed from the air. They started killing people from the air, civilians. And that was creating a real impossible frustration. And the Hamas...
Let's go back. I just want to go back 1 second. You said they were killing civilians from the air. Are you talking about the incident? Well, you mentioned the killing of the family on the beach by the shelling, but are you talking about the next thing that happened where they killed nine
people?
They wanted
to. The next incident was that there was a missile. A more advanced missile making its way in a car in the strip, and they decided that they announced that this missile is very dangerous. So, in the middle of a crowded street, they shot from the air their own missiles again and bombs against this one Palestinian missile, and at the process killed many passerbys, including children. And that was just a day after the Ghalia family.
They also, my understanding is there was also a second missile attack and that killed, this might have been a different incident, but there was an incident where there was a missile fired, and then a short time later, as ambulance drivers and civilians gathered to try to help people who had been injured, there was another missile fired, killing more people. Is that the same incident?
That is this event that I'm talking about. That's exactly that. As people were gathering, they shot another missile. And then there was a third incident where they aimed at a specific car, but they hit a house nearby. Right? So... But there was a clear escalation of the of hitting and hurting Gazan civilians. At that point, the Hamas did allow his people to participate in Qassam rockets, and instead of the average of one, two of sporadic Qassam, there were 2 days of that altogether 80. Qassam launched on Sderot, on the Israeli southern town. So there was a heavy. It's incomparable to the shelling of Gaza, where not rockets but real bombs were landing just in the last month previous to that to this period of the 10th of June. There were 5,000 Israeli shells dropped on the north of Gaza from land and sea.
So Hamas did eventually end the ceasefire, allowed the militant wing to be
but
involved.
But they stopped it, and after 2 days they stopped it. So that's the thing.
It is Hamas militants are one of the groups claiming responsibility for the taking of the soldier.
Yes, that's true, but that is incomparable. You cannot. This is really the UN. This was a military operation against an occupying force. The UN Committee of Human Rights just confirmed last week that occupied, according to the Geneva Conventions, do hold to Gaza, and these specify first the duty of the occupier to protect the citizens, but if you look at the Geneva Conventions themselves, they also give the occupied people the right to fight militarily against its occupier. So military action, so it's a guerrilla action against the occupying force, is recognized by international law, unlike terror, which is not protected and not recognized by international law and is only denounceable. Military resistance is allowed, maybe
including on Israel's soil, including outside the occupied area.
The situation in Gaza now is that the Israeli settlements were evacuated, but Gaza remained fully occupied, except that it's not occupied from the inside. The Israeli forces that control Gaza have moved from the inside to the outskirts. That's Kerem Shalom. When it happened, it's just simply on the other side of the wall of Gaza. So this is the army that is locking and putting the siege on the Gaza Strip, and also is bombarding, is using its forces to bombard the citizen of Gaza. Very serious bombardment. We are talking about not about rockets. It's tanks and cannons, shells falling in populated areas. Normally at the outskirts of populated area, but as happened with the Galia family, sometimes they are directed to people. So the the occupying army continues its activities as usual. It's an occupying army,
Okay, I think I understand what your point. I just have a few minutes left, and I want to ask you one final question. So you say that the Israeli public is aware, and that it's been reported in the papers there in Israel and some of the major papers, that this was actually a pre-planned assault, that this was not the reason, the soldier that was taken, but rather the excuse, basically, for this what's going on right now in Gaza, which is really an attempt to put Hamas out of power. And I don't know what beyond that, bombard and oppress people, I suppose. Anyway, if the Israeli public is fairly well aware of this, as well as you stated that many of them don't believe, many Israelis don't believe that this is going to bring the soldier back unharmed and alive, what is likely to come out of this, if anything? Is Israel just going to keep up? Is the Israeli military and government just going to continue along this line? And if so, what are the consequences, or what are the possible results of that that tactic?
One of the things that has become characteristic of Israel the last few years is the will of the majority is completely insignificant. So Israel still has the rituals of a democracy, but in reality, the power that determines is only the military. So the governments are unstable, government come and go, and the military leadership remains the same. And for years now, the military dictates the decisions of the government and determines the policy. This is I would say that Israel is by now a military dictatorship with the pretense and rituals of democracy. So it's not a new situation that the majority has no say. That has been like this for quite some years. So all the majority can do is answer a poll and express its will, but it's being normally ignored. It's not the only instance. In fact, you have stable majority for many years of Israelis that are willing to get out of the territories. The governments are working against the majority. About a third of them for moral reasons. They don't want to be the occupiers. Another third just because they want quiet and they see that the occupation has a very serious price. But the Israeli majority is to get out, and then the way it's handled is by since 93, the majority is being promised that ending the occupation is about to happen tomorrow. Well, we just need to finish this, and we just need to do this, and a few intermittent period of further polishing, and then. So now the majority is promised that Olmert is going to get out of the West Bank, and the way the operations in Gaza are packaged, it's necessary to eliminate and topple the Hamas government in order to enable the new peace concessions in the West Bank. So even for those Israelis who really want, who really want to get out and don't like it, what's happening in Gaza, they still think, maybe it's good to then topple the Hamas in order that we can get out of the West Bank.
So you think that this is just going to continue?
Whether it continues or not does not depend on the Israeli majority. That has no saying. It depends on the international community. I believe that Israel was about to go on a bigger operation, and it was behind the scenes. It was stopped, actually, maybe even by the U.S., but but only the big operation. So they started with a very massive thing of arrests of the Hamas leadership and bombarding the electricity and bridges in Gaza, and they, in fact, they had to give up the big plan. That was already because of some international attention. But so far, their policy is then to continue it on low scale, like they do, going to one area, getting out, entering another area. Right? And how far they can go is simply determined on how big a protest the international community manages to generate. So far, the European Union started with very, very hesitant signals of disagreement, and then there's some increase of them. So, and hopefully the U.S., and the major thing is if there's more pressure on the U.S. government to stop this, then everything would stop in one second.
And what should we as American citizens, in your opinion, be doing to pressure our government, and what should we be asking them to support? What kind of resolution should we be pushing for here? Our government gives, you know, billions of dollars a year to Israel, and more foreign aid than any other country. And we have a lot of our a lot of the weapons being used there were manufactured here in the U.S. A lot of the weapons being used to kill and maim Palestinians. What should Americans? What should our response be?
No, obviously the longer range is that the U.S. should stop this military support of Israel. But let's talk about the very near range, about what should be done tomorrow. And the major thing is it's a bit hard to understand, to digest, to believe it's happening, that there is an elected government that is being bombarded, arrested, and the world and no one recognizes it. The U.S. speaks about democracy. The U.S. Encouraged the elections of the Palestinian society. And once the Palestinians made their choice, Israel does not like their choice, and that's very clear because Israel is used to Palestinian leaders that whose only concern is what would be, how Israel's interests should be best served, how to guarantee Israel's security, how to prove they are recognizing Israel's willingness to exist, and the issue of the occupation and the interests of the Palestinian people were never put really seriously on the table over all these years, which is why the Palestinian people changed their government. They want to have a government that really represents them. And for Israel, this is the most horrifying thing. So now they are facing a real independent Palestinian government. So Israel does not like the result, which is completely understandable, given that they want to continue the occupation. But what is completely not understandable is how the world cooperates with this. There is an elected leadership, And the elected leadership declares day and night that they are willing to maintain the ceasefire. They are willing to enter negotiations as long as they have already in Algiers in 88, the Palestinian National Council accepted the solution of two states, that Israel will have the borders that it has up to 67 and the Palestinians will have the rest. But Israel has done nothing all these years to show that it is also willing to recognize the rights of the Palestinian people to exist. So the most obvious thing now, regardless of what the long-range solution is, the first thing is to reduce violence, and this can only be done by recognizing the Palestinian government and to begin with lifting the sanctions that the U.S. has agreed to put on under Israel's demands on the Palestinian government. So the Palestinians, even before this escalation, since the elections, they have been starved, closed, locked from the world economy. No one is getting salary in the West Bank or Gaza. People are working because the money to the Palestinian Authority has been frozen. So people's pensions are stopped. So it's all the whole system is collapsing just because Israel is not willing to recognize the Hamas government. So I think the major, major demand should be recognize immediately the elected government of the Palestinians and start negotiations with them, even just negotiate instead of kill.
I'm speaking with Tanya Reinhart. She is a professor emeritus at Tel Aviv University. She's a professor of linguistics. She's also the author of the book Israel-Palestine, How to End the War of 48. She writes columns for Yediot Aharonot, the biggest Israeli daily paper. And she has a forthcoming book coming out in September called The Roadmap to Nowhere, Israel-Palestine since 2003. Any final thoughts today, Tanya?
I think since I'm talking to American audience, I say that in my feeling, Israel is becoming a military-ruled country, so the will of the Israeli people no longer matters. And the way I see it, our military junta is determined to destroy as much as it can any chance for the Palestinians to survive. But I believe that by doing so, it's also destroying our chance, the Israeli chance to survive. And it's an extremely dangerous policy, and it's really what many Israelis feel instinctively is going to lead to everybody, to the big expulsion and to everybody's destruction. So at this point of time, I believe that our fate, both Palestinians and Israelis, is much in the hands of the international community. It's only if there would be real pressure on our government and army to stop ethnically cleansing the Palestinians and instead work on ending the occupation. This is the only salvation for both of us, both people, I mean.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Tanya. I really appreciate it.
Okay,
take care.
It was good.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And again, that was Tanya Reinhart. I was speaking with her over the phone at her home in Israel. Again, her book that is coming out in September is called The Roadmap to Nowhere, Israel-Palestine since 2003. And her columns appear in Yediot Aharonot, the biggest Israeli daily paper. And her book, Israel-Palestine, How to End the War of 48, is already out. It's a great book, and I've read it. It's excellent. I highly recommend it. Israel-Palestine, How to End the War of 48.